Part 3. The Vow. Belief is blindness of a kind so powerful that certain men willingly seek it out. Sholagar Mechatrix Yon Parabas. From Words Matter Not, M24. When all the knights are gone, only their enemies will truly care. Those they saved and served will flock to the aegis of new protectors, never recalling their names. Attributed to the imperial remembrancer Ignace Carcassi. Chapter 15. Crimson on White. Old Ground. Leave-taking. As he waited for the dawn glow to rise higher, the man turned in a slow circle and passed the time reading the history and the landscape around him. Some of it he gathered from his own instincts. More he took from flashes of Nemon implants fed into his brain by the hypnagogues long before he had come to Terra. The forest of tall, mutated fir trees filled a valley that had once been a bay, bordered by city sprawls now long dead and lost. The iron-hard trunks, grey-green like ancient jade, ranged away in all directions beyond the clearing where he had landed the cargo lighter. He could see former islands that were now stubby messes protruding from the valley floor, even pick out the distant shapes of old buildings swallowed by the tree line. But to the east, the clearest of the decrepit monuments to the dead city were the towers of a long-vanished highway bridge. Only the twisted remains of two narrow gates remained, rust-chewed and thousands of years old. Beyond them, in the time before the fall of night, there had been a great ocean. Now the strange forest petered out and became the endless desert of the Mendocene Plains. The bleakness of that thought was somehow comforting. Entropy is eternal, it said. Whatever we do today, it will matter not in centuries to come. Forests anew will rise and engulf all deeds. He turned and walked back to the lighter. The snow on the ground hissed beneath his footfalls as he came around to the drop ramp at the rear, open like a fallen drawbridge. Inside the flyer's otherwise empty hold, a man in a maintenance worker's oversuit looked up at his approach and pulled listlessly at the magnetic cuff tethering him to a support frame. The two of them were similarly dressed, alike in average height and nondescript aspect, but the chained man's face was swollen and florid.
"Harm," he began, his words emerging in puffs of vapour. "Look, comrade, this has gone far enough. I'm freezing my balls off."
His real name was not Harm, but it was who he was today. He stepped in and punched the worker in the face three times to stop him talking. Then, while the man was dazed and reeling, Harn released the mag cuff and used it to lead his captive out of the lighter. He chanced to look up into the cloudy sky. Not long now. The worker tried to speak, but all that came out was a wet, breathy noise. Perhaps he had thought they were friends. Perhaps the fiction that was Harn had been so good that the worker bought its reality without question. People usually did. Harn was a well-trained, highly accomplished liar. He wanted to strike the worker again, but it was important that the man not bleed. Not yet. With his free hand, Harn pulled a metallic spider from one of the deep pockets of his overcoat and clamped it around the worker's throat. His captive whimpered and then cried out in pain as the neurodendrite probes that were the spider's legs entered his flesh and found their way through meat and bone to nerve clusters and brain tissue. Harn released him, but not before giving the worker another item. An imperial soldier's battle knife. It was old, blackened by disuse and corrosion. There were stories in it, but they would not be heard today. The worker accepted the blade, wide-eyed and confused, wondering why he had been handed a weapon. Hound didn't give him time to think too long about it. He pulled back the sleeve of his coat to reveal a control panel with hologlyph keys secured around his wrist. Hound placed the fingers of his other hand on the panel and slid them around, feeling for the right position. In synchrony, the worker cried out and began a sudden, spastic series of motions. The spider device accepted the signals from the control and made him a puppet. He staggered back and forth as Harn got a sense of the range of motion. He began to weep and through coughing sobs, the worker,
begged for his life. Halm ignored his slurred entreaties, walking him away into the middle of the large clearing where the chem-stained snow was still virgin. When he was satisfied, Halm looked again at the oncoming dawn and nodded once. Highlighting two glyphs made the worker bring the old knife to his throat and draw it across. Manipulating other symbols forced his legs to work, walking him around in a perfect circle as blood jetted from the widening wound. Halm watched the spurts of crimson form jagged, steaming lines in the snowfall. Each wet, red axis pointed away to the horizon. Eventually, the cut killed the worker, and he dropped, sprawled across the mark of his own making. Halm felt a change in the air, a grotesquely familiar acidity that was alien and uncanny. It was good, he decided. He saw the object before he heard it. A hole melted through the low clouds, and a flickering meteoric form fell from the sky. A heartbeat later, a supersonic scream came with it, although he knew no one else beyond the valley would hear it, walled in and smothered as it was by the magics the spilled blood provided. The object slammed into the earth with enough shock force to toss Halm back 10 yards and rock the cargo lighter on its landing skids. When he rose to his feet, Halm saw that a shallow pit had been dug by the impact, revealing black dirt beneath the blood-stained snow. The worker's corpse had been directly beneath the fall, the very point upon which it was targeted, and if any of the man now remained, it was only shreds and rags. In the pit was a capsule not unlike those used to eject the bodies of the dead into stars for solar cremation. Hot and sizzling, it creaked and shuddered as something moved inside. Halm looked up again and saw the hole in the cloud sealing up once more. He allowed himself a moment to wonder where the pod had come from. Dropped by a ship from orbit, dragged from the immaterium itself, conjured out of a dream. And then forgot his own question. It wasn't important. Only the mission mattered. Heat seared him, even through his heavy gloves, but Halm found the seam of the capsule and pulled on it. A wash of thick air, dense with human smells, assaulted him, and fingers of fire-burned flesh emerged through the widening gap. Then, presently, a hand, an arm, a torso. A figure stepped onto Terran soil. A tall man with unkempt hair, a hawkish face and haunted, wild eyes, and glared at him.
"It worked," he growled. "Each time I think it will not. I shouldn't. Should not doubt."
The words he spoke were rough and scratchy. The new arrival's tone made Halm imagine a feral animal taught to walk upright and speak like a person. Halm gestured at the pod interior.
"You need to kill your pathfinder before it—"
The other man's dark eyes flashed.
"I know. I've done this before."
He hesitated.
"Haven't I?"
He shook off his own question and reached into the capsule. With a wet, tearing noise, he ripped a bulb of gelatinous, oily flesh from where it had been nestled in among the pod's inner workings. It writhed and squealed, trying to squirm out of his grip. Halm was going to offer the man another of his many knives with which to finish the task, but when he looked back, the new arrival had a pistol in his fist. Halm had not seen him draw it, had not even seen a holster for the gun. Even the weapon itself seemed strange. He didn't really see it. It was more like he saw the impression of it. Something murderous and accursed made of chromed parts moving with no mechanical logic. Or was it assembled out of glassy crystal and ruby-red liquid? He had no time to really understand, because it fired, and his vision went purple with the after-image. Even the prescribed mech enhancements of Halm's vision didn't stop the retina burn, and he blinked furiously. After a moment his sight returned, and there was only grey ash where the Pathfinder thing had been. The pistol had vanished. He said nothing of it. These things, these moments of not understanding, they were not new to Halm. He kept himself above them by remembering, once again, the mission. The mission. Always the mission.
"Were you briefed?" said the man.
His manner shifted like the winds. Now he was cold and professional.
"A basic summary. I am to provide operational support for the duration of your assignment," he replied. "My name is Halm, for the interim." "How long have you served Horus?"
Halm hesitated, glancing around. Even here, in the deep wilds, far from the nearest settlement, he was reluctant to speak the War Master's name aloud.
"Longer than I have been aware," he said, at length.
A more honest answer to that question would be lengthy and complex. That seemed to amuse the other man.
Truth in that,
he allowed, and started for the cargo lighter.
There are several avenues to follow, but only one target. You'll help me locate it.
Hal nodded and reached inside his coat for a melter grenade, priming the timer and radius so it would obliterate all trace of the pod and the sacrifice.
As you wish, he told the assassin.
Half a world away, a sky of artificial night made the wastes of Albia seem like a sketch in charcoal and slate. Miles above the ground, the aerotropolis of Kolob cast a massive shadow as it floated on a ring of colossal antigravs, causing microclimate veils of hard, cold rain to race across the stony hillsides. The warrior had been walking for the better part of a day. His stormbird had climbed away and left him on a twisted crag somewhere in the northern Sinx, just as ordered. He climbed down and started on a southerly path, his pace careful and the sodded clanks and hisses of his power armor a steady metronome. He walked, waiting for the great emptiness of the landscape to clear his thoughts. It had not happened yet. This place was home to him, or it would have been if that word held any true meaning for the legionary. His past was a gossamer thing, faint and ephemeral, so delicate that he wondered if looking too closely upon it would make it fade forever. The memories of the time before he took on oath and armor in service to the Imperium of Man were strange to him. In many ways, they were a fiction he had been told, more than a chain of events he had actually experienced. Had he ever really been the ragged youth that lurked in his deep recollection? The one that was sallow of face and always cold? If he reached for it, if he dug in and tried hard, he could pull some fragments back to the surface. Sensations, mostly. Pieces so small and dislocated that they hardly deserve to be thought of as memories. Warmth in the embrace of a parent. The sight of shooting stars crossing the sky. A lake of captured sunlight, as gold as coin. Those events were centuries old. The outlines of the faces he saw there belonged to people long since dead and turned to dust, their voices lost to him. Wiped away by the bioprogramming and hard wiring of his brain that made him a superlative warrior. Like all of his kind, the forgetting was required to reforge him into what he had become. These grains of his old self were all that remained, trapped in the cracks of his newer nature, the one carved out of the body he was born in and built anew with implants, techno-organs, and powerful genetic modifications. He carried a special, quiet apprehension that one day he would look for these grains and they would be gone. The legionary knew brothers like that, who had lost whatever had made them human. He looked up into the sky, watching the orbital plate's slow progress, thinking of those men. Some of them were like him, holding on to the threads of their better selves in silent desperation. But more, far too many more, had willingly opened their hands and let go of any ties to Terra, to the past, to who they had once been. Once he would not have had the words to describe these events, but ever since the insurrection, he did. He thought of his battle brothers as having given up their souls, as if there were such a thing. The warrior halted at the edge of a crumbling ridge, surrounding a vast pit that resembled a volcanic caldera. There had been a city here long ago, assembled atop a network of tunnels and caverns, but wars had washed over it and torn it away. Remnants of the ancient caves were visible down there, laid bare by forces that had shredded mountains. He knew this place, the specter of it trapped in one of the memory pieces. Perhaps he had lived in the shanty towns that clustered down along the walls of the pit, or ventured from one of the hive towers in the far distance. He did not know. The content of the memory was gone, only its empty vessel capable of bringing him to this place. Another hard pulse of rain lashed over him, and he glimpsed his own flickering reflection in an elongated puddle. A hulking shape in ghost-grey war gear, face hidden behind a beaked, cold-eyed battle helm. A cuirass about his shoulders with golden detail, rendered dull and lifeless by the bleak sky. A great sword in the scabbard on his back, a master-crafted bolter clamped to his hip. He reached up and removed the helmet, mag-locking it to a thigh plate, taking a breath of damp air laced with heavy pollutants. He met his own gaze on the water's surface. The knight-errant Nathaniel Garrow looked back at himself, measuring the scars that were the map of his war record. He felt old and empty, a sensation that had been banished from him for a long while but now returned in full effect. The last time he had experienced such a thing, it had been as the madness unfolded over Istvan III. As he stood aboard the frigate Eisenstein, and slowly came to the shattering conclusion that his legion had betrayed him. As the Warmaster Horus's rebellion had been birthed before him, the very personal treachery of his brethren and his Primarch Mortarion hollowed him out. Perhaps, if he had been without courage and honour, Garrow might have faltered in that moment, might never have recovered from what he witnessed. But instead, he found a new kind of strength. Emboldened by the singular truth laid bare before him, that of his unswerving loyalty to Terra and the Emperor of Mankind, Garrow defied the traitors and set upon a flight into danger, racing back to the solar system with word of warning. Had he been without focus, Garrow's future and that of the refugees he brought with him might have ended with that deed. But his loyalty found reward, of a sort. The Emperor's right hand, the great Psyker and regent of Terra, Malkador the Sigillite, took the reins of Garrow's purpose. The former battle captain of the Death Guard became Agentia Primus of the Sigillite's clandestine task force. He became a knight-errant, legionless, but charged with great deeds. Or so he had believed. After years of working to Malkador's Byzantine orders, recruiting others like himself, chasing down Horus's spies, secretly crisscrossing the stars beneath the shroud of a tormented galaxy, Garrow's certainty of purpose became clouded. More and more, he was coming to believe that fate had spared him at Istvan for something larger than just the Sigillite's enigmatic designs. Already he had openly challenged Malkador's commands, in the Somnus Citadel on Luna and in the halls of an unfinished fortress on distant Titan. How long would it be before he spoke his doubts aloud and in the fullest? Garrow could not hold to silence forever. It simply was not in his character. His craggy face twisted in a scowl, annoyance flaring. He had been foolish to come here. Some sentimental part of his spirit hoped that walking these lands would take him to a calmer place, where he could quiet his uncertainties and find a measure of peace. But that was not happening, and he knew it would never come. He resented the lack of answers, the directionless unawareness that pushed and pulled at him whenever his thoughts should have been at rest. More than anything, he wanted to come to a place of tranquility and, in it, find understanding. Garrow was a legionary, a soldier born to duty. But the one before him was not right. It was not enough. Everyone in the galaxy had been changed by Horus's sedition, if they knew it or not. Garrow knew with great clarity how he had been altered. Something had broken free inside him, as his legion's sworn oaths had blackened and disintegrated. He was more than just a weapon of war, to be directed at a target and told to fight or perish. A heavier mantle had fallen upon him, a champion's duty. Have faith, Nathaniel. You are of purpose. The words echoed in his thoughts. The woman Keela, she had opened his mind to that truth. She understood. Perhaps for Garrow to understand, too, he would need to find her again and... On the wet breeze he sensed the stale odour of animals and froze. Garrow listened and picked out the footfalls of two quadrupeds, stalking him across the shale and mud. He turned his head and picked them out against the dark stone. Lupinate forms, the pair of them. Predators evolved from the wolves that had once stalked the woodlands of this region, in the times before the trees had died off, never to return. Their large bodies were long and sinuous, their fur slick with secreted oils that sloughed off the toxic rains and made their thermal aspects harder to see. Arrow-shaped ears twitched and stiffened as they tracked Garrow's smallest movement, while narrow eyes fixed him with a gelid, hungry gaze. Normally, lupinates stayed away from the edges of human-habited zones, preferring to prey on the odd, unwary traveller caught out alone. That a hunting pair had come so close to the shanty towns in the pit could only mean their life cycle was being disrupted as well as everyone else's on Terra. The global day and night preparations for Horus's inevitable invasion trickled down to even the most insignificant of the planet's creatures. Garrow had drawn his sword without being aware of it. The power blade Libertas, his stalwart war companion for 100 years and 1,000 conflicts, could slice through tank armor when fully charged. His lip curled. These animals were not worth that expenditure of energy.
Go!
He barked at them, planting the sword in the ground with its hilt facing the sky. Garrow took a menacing step towards the predators.
Be gone!
But the lupinates were starving and agitated beyond rationality. They attacked, flashing forward in a glistening arc of motion. Both leapt at him, smelling his breath, claws and teeth aiming to gain purchase on the bare flesh of his face. The legionary's arm blurred, and he snatched the closest of the creatures from the air at the top of its arc, grabbing it by the throat. The second he battered away with the back of his gauntlet. He saw it crash into the rocks with a furious yelp. The lupinate in his grip spat venom at him, missing his face but spattering on his chest plate. The droplets sizzled where they landed, scorching the slate-colored armor. Garrow's lips thinned, and he threw the creature in the direction of the standing sword. His aim was true enough, and the blade so sharp even in its inactive state that the force of the throw bifurcated the creature and sent its parts tumbling over the edge of the pit. He stalked across to the second, wounded animal and stamped down on its head, crushing its skull beneath his heavy, ceramite boot before it could rise. Grim-faced, Garrow returned to recover Libertas. If he had believed in omens, the appearance of the lupinates would mean ill portent.
A wolf, said a careful voice, attacking out of blind hate and savagery. That reminds me of someone.
Garrow withdrew his sword and replaced it in the scabbard, noting that the rain had suddenly stopped.
Horus is not a savage, unless he needs to be.
He turned and found Malkador studying the dead animal with mild disdain. Quite how the sigillite was able to approach him without sound or signal, the legionary did not know. Garrow had learned not to ask such questions, as there were never any answers that satisfied him.
Was it necessary to kill them?
Said the other man, rolling back the cloak that concealed his gaunt features. Pale, silver hair fell to his shoulders.
The beasts have as much right to be here as you.
I gave them the chance to withdraw, said the warrior. I would grant the same to any foe.
Honorable in all things.
Malkador gave a small shrug and looked away, dismissing the moment.
Is he actually here? Garrow wondered. I could be perceiving some fragment of him projected by a psyker's might.
It was very possible that in all the times Garrow had stood before the sigillite, he had in fact never stood before him, at least not in the most literal sense. The regent of Terra's psionic power was said to be second only to that of the Emperor himself, and the Emperor. Divine was not a word that Garrow would have used, but there were few others that could encompass the power of the master of mankind. If the Emperor were not a god, then he was as near to it as had ever existed. The image of a golden icon, of a two-headed Aquila dancing on the end of a chain, flitted through his thoughts, and he pushed it away. The sigillite looked towards him, as if he could smell the memory just as the wolf things had caught Garrow's scent.
You have not found what you are looking for, Nathaniel, he said. This has become troubling to me.
I perform my duties to your order, said the legionary.
Malkador smiled.
There's more to it than that. Don't deflect. I chose you to serve because of your honesty, your simplicity. But as time passes, the clear view I have becomes more clouded.
The smile faded.
Duty turns to burden. Obedience chafes and eventually becomes defiance. It was this way with the lunar wolf.
He nodded toward the dead lupinate.
I did not see it until it was too late. And so I am watchful for the same patterns now, closer to home.
Garrow stiffened.
After I tallied all the things I lost in order to prove my allegiance, he began, my legion, my brotherhood, I told myself that the next man who dared to suggest I was disloyal would bleed for it.
Ah, but your promise contains a fatal flaw,
Malkador replied, ignoring the threat.
You begin from the assumption that loyalty is a fixed point, immutable once established.
The sigillite broke off and turned to look eastward, his eyes narrowing as if attracted by something only he could perceive. After a moment, he turned away and continued, speaking as if nothing had happened.
But it is a flag planted in sand, Nathaniel. It can and will drift under the action of outside forces you may never see until you are challenged. You were loyal to Mortarion, until the moment you were not. You were loyal to the War Master, until you were not. You are loyal to me.
I am loyal to the Emperor, Garrow corrected him. And on my life, that flag will never fall.
I believe you, said the Sigilite, but my point still stands. Your missions, the whole reason why I gave you the Grey and my mark to carry.
He gestured to Garrow's armor, where the small icon of a stylized eye was barely visible.
They have been obscured of late by other issues.
Garrow looked away. You speak of what I glimpsed on Saturn's moon. Malkador shook his head.
It began long before you ventured to places that are outside your purview.
The Sigilite wandered to the edge of the pit and looked down, taking in the gloomy settlement far below.
You went to the Riga orbital plate at your own bidding. You have been casting out feelers in the time between your missions, looking for something. Someone.
Garrow became very still. Of course Malkador knows, he told himself. How could I have believed he would not see the pattern?
Yes, continued the Sigilite. I am aware of the Lectitio Divinitatis and the believers who have read Lorgar's book.
Lord Aurelian? The Word-Bearer? Garrow's brow furrowed, unsure if he had heard Malkador correctly. The Sigilite went on.
I know they think of our Emperor as a living deity, despite all his words to the contrary.
He took a step back.
And I know of the woman, Euphrati Kila, the mere remembrancer who is now revered as a living saint.
The question slipped out of Garrow's mouth before he could stop himself from uttering it.
Where is she?
Malkador gave a rueful smile.
Not everything is clear to me, Nathaniel. Even if that is the image I like to project, some things...
The smile became brittle.
Some places. Even I cannot reach. As curious as that is.
But if you know of them, why do you allow the gatherings to go on unchecked?
There are so many, and more with each passing month.
The Sigilite opened his arms to the sky.
But perhaps you have forgotten that we are embroiled in a war that threatens to consume the galaxy. There are many things of far greater import before me. They are not like the lodges that Horus used to suborn the legions. These believers are little more than groups of worried people drawing solace from the pages of a fanatic's scribblings.
He paused, thinking.
That book proves my earlier point, when I spoke of malleable loyalty. Lorgar Aurelian was so very faithful when he wrote it. And look at him now.
Garrow nodded. I saw the 17th Legion before Ulanor, and then after Istvan. Like day and night they were, but still a commonality of mad zeal in each incarnation. He paused, marshalling his words.
But I am not a word-bearer. I am not even a death guard any more. I am only the Emperor's sword, and that I will remain until the day I die. I believe you,
Malkador repeated.
But even the best of blades can become blunted and careworn if left untended. It is clear that you cannot function fully as my Agentia Primus while you remain distracted by other concerns.
The Sigilite's tone hardened, and Garrow found himself unconsciously taking up a combat stance. His war implants flexed and came alive, as they would if he were about to engage a foe. The very real possibility that Malkador was going to end him sang through Garrow's nerves.
You are of no use to me if you are preoccupied. I need agents who are here, in the moment. I need weapons and tools if I am to end the war before it blackens Terra's skies.
Speak plainly, then, Garrow demanded. If the worst were to come, he would meet it head on. This was not the first time he had been ready for such an outcome. Malkador sighed.
After much consideration, I have decided to grant you a leave of absence. Of a sort.
He gestured at the sky, the floating city still blotting out the weak sun above them.
Go and find your answers, Nathaniel, wherever they may lie.
It was the last thing Garrow had expected from the Sigilite. Censure and reprimand, indeed, but not permission.
You would allow that?
I spoke the words. I have granted it. Malkador eyed him.
But there are certain conditions. You will leave behind your war gear, your power armor, your weapons. And, more importantly, you will go without the authority I have conferred upon you. In this, you will be only Nathaniel Garrow, late of the Death Guard Legionis Astartes. Whatever you want, you will find it on your own.
In the distance, Garrow heard the sound of powerful engines and a fast approach. A dropship was coming in. The warrior reached for his sword and removed it, scabbard and all, from his armor.
I will not leave Libertas in the hands of another, he intoned. All else, I agree to. And still you challenge me, even in this.
Malkador folded his arms.
Very well. Keep the sword. Perhaps you will need it.
A thunderhawk in unadorned grey livery crested the far ridgeline and tore over the pit, slowing to a hover on jets of flame. It pivoted in place as the pilot looked for somewhere to set down. Garrow had done nothing to summon the dropship, nor seen Malkador do likewise, and yet here it was.
They will take you where you want to go, said the sigillite,
his words carrying over the howl of the engines. Garrow raised a hand to shield his face as the thunderhawk settled on the wide crag, the downdraft blasting a spray of rainwater up and about him.
But do not tarry. Horus is coming, and we must be ready. I will array every servant of the Emperor in preparation to resist him, and you are counted in that number. Am I clear?
Garrow nodded as the thunderhawk's thrusters fell to an idling growl.
Aye,
he replied, turning back to look at the sigillite.
It is.
He stood alone on the ridge, as the rain began to fall once again.